Stanley Ginsberg. Yes, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Stan.
Yes, sir. And who is this?
This is Dave Nielsen.
Ah, okay. I should have guessed that.
I had screwed up the code. I had 722 instead of 772.
Yeah, that was my mistake. I misentered it. Anyway, nice talking to you. What can I do for you?
Well, I called in to listen to what everyone had to say.
Well, so far you and I are everyone.
Maybe the code got messed up. Let me also text my friend.
Okay.
Who wanted to call in and.
Okay.
Just a second here. I really enjoy your book.
Oh, thank you. What breads have you made so far?
I'm trying to start at the beginning and work my way through. Let's see. I've done the Provincial Rye, the Ammerman Black. I made the crackers with a hole in it. I can't remember what the names of those are.
Yeah, the honey flaxseed flatbread.
Yeah, I really like those. I can't remember a couple of the other ones.
Nice. Okay.
But I really think this is a great idea. I think probably having the code messed up probably got a few people not into the conference call.
Yeah, well, I think what has to happen is it needs to develop some traction. And
right.
Hopefully at some point people will just be thronging to it. But in the meantime, this is a start. I'm thinking about the stores back in the old days that would put up the first dollar they received. Unfortunately, there's no way I can put up your phone number or anything. But you definitely have special standing. What has your experience been with the baking? Had you done much rye baking before?
No, not specifically. I've been making bread for a long time, but I've made an occasional rye here and there, but not really in a focused way.
Uh-huh.
So I get part of my challenges are I really get confused about the terminology. You have a set of terminology. It seems like everybody has a set of terminology.
Right.
You know, I live in the Bay Area. I went up to Central Milling the other day, and they have a, I think it was a medium white rye. So I don't know what that one is. So.
Oh, that was Central Milling, right? That's you know, one of these days I had promised that I was going to do a piece on rye grading, and unfortunately there are no hard and fast standards here as there are in Europe, and so that becomes a real problem. But their light medium rye is the equivalent of a German type 1150, which is about 1.2% ash, whereas medium rye is about 1.4%, 1.35 to 1.4, and whole grain rye is about 1.75% ash. So,
well, I have to tell you, I really appreciate you being on Facebook and being responsive to questions and comments. That's very handy for a novice like myself to be able to ask questions and get answers from an authoritative source.
Well, you know, I have to tell you also that most people, as far as rye is concerned, have very limited experience because we don't have a great culture of rye baking in this country. And
right.
And people are only now starting to get interested in it, which, you know, to me it's just an extraordinary medium, if you will, to work in because there are just so many different flavors and techniques and things that you can do with it. It's really quite stunning. It just blows me away. I love it. So,
well, it's really nice that you put the book together because, like I said, I'm kind of working my way through. I picked out about 30 or so I want to try, and so I do other breads too. So I'm just kind of working my way.
Nice. No, that sounds great. I mean, have you found that that it's been easy, that the results have been, you know, that the techniques have been manageable and the steps have been manageable and the dough's been behaving as described and things have been coming out as promised?
Yeah, the only challenge I had was with the Ammerman Black.
Yeah, the Ammerman Black, right.
Yeah, it came out hard as a rock on the outside, and I posted a question and you responded to, and I tried that with one of the other breads, and that worked out fine. So I'm going to go back and do that one again and give it a shot.
Yeah, the problem is that those dense breads really, they take a long time to stabilize internally. So, you know, 48 hours is really a minimum to leave it. And the other thing would be to brush it with boiling water as soon as it comes out of the oven.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do that again the next time.
Right.
Yeah, the only qualm I have about the book is the way I like to do my baker's percentages, it would have been handy for me if you would have published the final dough percentages. I know you said that's confusing, and Jeffrey Hamelman says the same thing in bread.
Right.
But so I end up going through the way I do my adjusting for baking however much dough I want to bake is I end up going through and calculating all the final dough percentages myself and writing them in the book.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's helpful if you need to scale up or down.
Right.
But as far as the final dough percentages, in the book I followed, and I guess Jeffrey also does, I followed the Bread Bakers Guild of America convention, which is we do not include baker's percentages for the final dough because, again, the possibility especially of adding too much salt, which is or too much yeast, which can be a real problem if those numbers are misread.
Yeah, I think they underestimate the audience because a lot of the other books, Reinhardt's books,
right,
Shel Seuss and Advanced Bread and Pastry, those books, they all include the final dough percentages.
Right.
I've taken a number of weekend classes at the San Francisco Baking Institute.
Ah, okay.
And they have all their, they include all their final percentages.
Right. Yeah, I have not met Michel, but I understand he's a real stickler for precision. So.
Well, you don't run into him at the weekend classes either, but except seeing him in the hall sometimes.
Ah, okay.
But I found them very, very fun classes, very fun classes.
Okay. Looks like we have another attendee on the call.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably my buddy, David.
Hi, Stan. This is David Bond.
Hi, David. Nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for doing this. It's really exciting to talk to the man himself. So I'm
very
enthusiastic serious home baker, and I have been tracking your stuff. I've got a couple of your other books, and when I heard you were doing the Rye Baker, I was like, oh, man, I'm so excited. So I pre-ordered it, and then I got this thing, and I look at that bread on the cover. I'm like, I am making that bread, and I flipped through the book, and it said, that's the Westphalian.
Yep.
I just – that really, you know, dense, dark, awesome bread. Mm-hmm. So I've made it a couple of times, and I had a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
One is, I think it came out better the first time anyway. So let's see. My question is, two things, I guess. The salt percentage seems a tiny bit on the low side for a bread that really is just coarse rye meal and salt and flour. I mean, salt and water. So
right.
How did you land at, 1.09% salt for something so grainy?
Well, that frankly is, I pulled it out of an amalgam of German language recipes that I had seen for that
mm-hmm.
bread.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about rye breads is that the salt content generally, and I think I mentioned this in the book, the salt content generally is lower than in wheat breads because
mm-hmm.
rye is such an assertive flavor that that the salt really is does its job much more in the background. So rye percentage, salt percentage in rye breads generally runs anywhere between 1 and about 1.75%, whereas it's much more common to see things like around. Dave, I'm afraid you're breaking up. I don't understand. Hello?
I'm still here, but I don't know what happened to Mr. Bond.
I don't know. Well, he appears, Don. I guess he appears to have dropped off the call. So, probably.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. He lives in Illinois, and
okay.
He's even more serious than I am. He's got his own milling stuff, and
good for him.
And he does. He has half of his house dedicated, I think, to making bread.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
Sorry,
yes,
all of a sudden I just got a bunch of garbledy gook on the phone. It was really weird.
Yeah,
so
same here.
And,
same here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but are you on a cell phone or?
Yes. Yes.
That might have had something to do with it. But
okay.
In any case, what I was saying is that generally the salt percentages in rye breads are typically lower than in wheat breads. Wheat breads run about 2%. Rye breads
right.
typically will run anywhere between 1 and 1.75.
I see. Okay.
And that again, I think
that.
Is largely because rye is so much more flavorful than wheat that. That just lurking in the background, the salt will enhance a lot of the other flavors to come out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense.
So,
it totally makes sense. Cool. With regard to this bread, too, time I made it, actually, I'm one of the crazy guys who have a mill in my house. I'm totally obsessed with all this stuff, and I'm
right. Yeah. What kind
I have a job that allows
of...
me to be obsessed. I've got a grain maker, number 99. So
is that stone? I've got two. I've got a KitchenAid and I've got a mop mill. So
yeah,
both are little attachments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was right. I was heading down the road for a country living, and then which I've heard and I've seen, and I went to a Maine Grain Alliance fair out there in Skowhegan once, and
right.
saw a little demo. And I'm like, yeah, eventually I want to get into this. It's really cool. And And then I got waylaid into this awesome heavy-duty piece of equipment. This thing is just genius. I love it. It's so
nice.
Great. And I can dial that sucker down. It's not a stone mill. It's metal burrs. But, man, that thing can really, really, really fine. So I can, you know, I can make, and it just has a dial, so I can ease back and make cracked stuff and, you know,
mm-hmm.
meals, light, medium, you know, whatever. And I can put popcorn in there and make all kinds of different grades of cornmeal. I put my rye in there and make, you know, I crank it all the way down really tight, and it's just this really, really fine,
terrific.
Awesome thing. I put my, you know, wheat berries in there, and, you know, I line my bannetons with rice flour. I put my rice in there, so it's really, really cool. So I'm very much enjoying it, and I highly recommend it.
Sounds like it.
And
great.
Yeah, it really, really is a great machine, so well made. These guys are really, really serious about their stuff. So, and then I was deluded that I was going to just crank that baby every time I needed a few cups, and I was like, okay, that is not happening. It was
right,
a lot
exactly.
more work to get a couple of cups of flour than I ever thought. So,
yeah, I think it's a much nicer idea in the concept than in the activity.
Right.
I tend to use my mills only on, you know, for very special needs. For instance, when I'm roasting malted rye, I'll put
mm-hmm.
it through the KitchenAid so that I can get it milled down to a fine flour
mm-hmm.
since I roast the whole kernels.
Right.
You know, same thing with malted barley. If I'm making like for instance the East German malt rye,
mm-hmm.
or other breads. I have one on the blog that was a deconstructed saison bread, and I used two different kinds of malted barley for that one. But generally speaking,
mm-hmm.
if I want freshly milled grain, I go to my friend Nan Kohler at Grist and Toll in Pasadena, who's got a 40-inch Osttiroler stone mill.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
and,
I've read about those.
Yeah, I mean this
nice.
Is a monster, and
and
she produces incredible flours out of heirloom and legacy grains, stuff that I can't get, you know, in
cool.
the kinds of small quantities that I would use. And so she has. I've gotten just a whole bunch of really good stuff from her, and there are others also. You know, you mentioned Maine Grains, Amber Lamke.
Mm-hmm.
They also do nice stuff in Skowhegan. In fact, I'm going to be at the Kneading Conference doing a rye presentation this July. So.
Oh, really? Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about due to go back there. It was, I think, 3 or 4 years ago, but the wheat stock is this year. I'm hoping to get into that.
Yes. Yeah, well,
are you going to be there?
That's a tough one to get into.
Yeah, I know. I got lucky the last time. So I'm in Evanston here, right near Kendall College. So I'm
yeah.
a 30-minute drive yeah, from the whole place. So it would be really great to get in.
Yeah, but
so my other question.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say that as far as I know, at least through Bread Bakers Guild, the whole thing now is on lottery.
The lottery, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was a lottery last time, too. So, yeah,
yep.
Definitely got lucky. The other question about the West Philly, so this time I made it, it seemed really, really dense, and I'm studying your picture on the cover and inside, you know, and I'm thinking,
yep.
you know, it looks pretty dense there, too, and I know, you know, photography and light can do a lot of stuff, but, man, it's really, really, really packed and really dense. So, I mean, I follow the recipe to a T and generally have good results where I've made a dozen of the recipes in this book probably so far and got my eye on
mm-hmm.
a dozen more. But and I was very close to signing up to your class. Where was it, in Portland?
Yes.
Or it's going to be. And then I hesitated, and it was also sold out. So I was
right.
like, okay, I missed that one. So
well,
I earmarked all
the... Well, there are a couple of things.
Yeah?
We're thinking, Bread Bakers Guild and I are thinking about possibly doing another one later in the year, either on the East Coast or in the Midwest.
Oh, great. That would be cool.
To
the Midwest?
Yeah, I mean, I have, I would love to, hit Chicago, and I have friends in southern Wisconsin, you know, who I'd love to see.
Oh, nice.
So.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I'm looking for really, really, I know this is not a light bread, and I'm not looking for an open crumb, obviously, but
right.
I just, it's not quite, I feel like, and I placed a big order and sampled a bunch of your stuff from the New York bread baker stuff. And so I used your coarse rye meal and, you know, stuff. And I just, you know, I didn't quite, I don't know, it didn't come together. And I heard the tail end of you talking to David and said that you can brush with boiling water. So it's not just the crumb, but it's really the condensed and, maybe the first time I made it, I didn't have your stuff, so I put some rye berries through my mill, and I'm thinking maybe it was kind of loose, but it was probably a little on the finer side versus the really coarsely chopped meal that I got from you. Yep. So maybe that had something to do with it.
That is possible. The other thing I would suggest is that when you add the coarse rye meal to the scald. I generally mix it for somewhere around 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
Now, I don't know whether you mix it to that for that length of time both times, because what happens there is that that mixing will knock a lot of the a lot of the starchy endosperm out into the dough. Because the rye is so coarse. It needs to be manhandled. Needs to be beaten up.
It really does. Yeah, I got a little nervous. You know what? I'm glad you said that because I go right to the book and it said, you know, do it until it forms an evenly hydrated glutinous mass, about 20 minutes. Right. And I get a little worried about that old. So I've got a 5-quart Cuisinart and I got an 8-quart commercial NSF one, and the 8-quart's a little too big. It won't gather up. You know, sort of. So I had to put it in the 5-quart, and I'm feeling the top of that thing and get nervous, you know, that I'm going to burn out the strip that thing. So what are you using your KitchenAid and running that?
I have a 6-quart fixed head. And one of the problems that I find is that there is a tendency when I add the rye meal to the scald, for the dough to jump out of the bowl. So I have to stand there
to do it
and work it slowly and put it back in and make sure that the bowl is well scraped down. But again, I think the key is just is getting in as much mixing time as possible. Because again, the idea is to get as much of that that starchy endosperm into the dough as possible.
That makes sense.
All right, because in effect, I mean, what that's going to do is that's going to form the glue, so to speak, that's going to hold the loaf together.
Right.
You know,
right,
alternatively,
right.
If you don't want to do that, you could probably fudge it a little bit by adding, 100 or 150 grams or so of wholemeal or medium rye flour to the dough.
Right, okay. Okay, that makes sense. And I think maybe that's why the first one probably turned out. The other thing is it tends to gather around the paddle, and it's not mixing. It's just like it's so sticky and so glutinous that as I go around, it's just picking it up. And so I'm stopping every like 30 seconds. I'm like, well, this is crazy, and I'm scraping off the paddle. And so it's so thick and so that I think you're right that it's not releasing, you know, the starchy endosperm into the dough because it's just like clumping. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, the other thing I would suggest there, I mean, I think 5-quart is really pretty small. I would say use your 8-quart.
Okay.
You know, because going to, first of all, you probably won't have the jumping dough problem. Secondly, there will be enough room so that the dough can adhere to the walls of the mixer bowl and get pulled off the paddle.
Right. Right. Okay. Otherwise, I just keep cleaning off the paddle and let it go again until it gets all stuck up there and clean it down. And
exactly.
No, I'm not averse to that. But
right. Yeah. But again, I mean, when that happens, you know, if you're stopping it every minute or two, you may have to increase the total mix time to half an hour or so.
For sure. Totally get it. Yeah. I think you've hit on it. I think they, because I sort of realized that there's something about getting it to the proper mixing state that will, you know, let it not leaven, but give it that same look that you have in the picture. So that's cool.
Right.
I don't want to be greedy, but I have a couple more questions. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
You know, so far, you and Dave appear to be the only two folks on the call. So.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I would have been there. We were both dialed in at the 8 o'clock, but we had the wrong code, unfortunately.
Right, yeah, well, that was my bad.
Oh, no worries. That's okay. Okay,
go ahead. Dave, do you have any comments or questions?
Oh, yeah, about the Westphalian, David. I think you tried that too, right?
I'm just listening at the moment. I haven't tried that one. I've tried a couple of other ones.
Okay. The other thing, the Ammerland. I love that thing. I love
that. That's a wonderful bread.
Yeah. And the flax. Oh my gosh! And then the molasses. I mean, oh. And so I think maybe in my heart I want the Westphalian to taste like the Ammerland. I'm like, well, dude, it doesn't have all that molasses. You know,
right.
It's never going to be like that. You know, but boy, that's a great bread. Oh my God, love it,
yes,
love it. So one of the ones. One of the questions I have, I do the rhythm of a 70-70-70 refresh, as you had talked about, 70 water, 70 starter, and 70 rye flour.
Yep.
And I find myself doing that, and I think the first couple times out, I sort of didn't read the fine print, and I was using that as my starter. Like, I refresh it, you know, at night, leave it out in the morning. It's 12 hours old, and then I'd do day one stuff or day two, and I would just, you know, use that as it called for, you know, 20 grams of rye flour. I'd use that, and then I realized, like, oh, my gosh. It's supposed to be 77, and you're only supposed to use 7%, not 7
right.
grams,
point,
not
yeah,
70.
Right.
Right. So is that screwing things up? Obviously not for the Westphalian because there's anything in there. So I guess my question is it okay if I use?
Well, let's deconstruct the problem. When I first started baking with wild yeast starters. Like a lot of other people, I was using 50% seed culture, and you know, and so if I was doing 100 grams of flour, I was putting in 50 grams of the seed culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started looking at the way the Germans bake, and what I discovered was that they. You know, they typically use this 100-110 formula. And it makes a lot of sense. And the reason it makes sense is when you're feeding a starter, really what you're doing is inoculating a dough, a water flour mixture with the lactic acid bacteria and the wild yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And they reproduce at such a high rate that the idea is you don't need to, you know, to overload it. In fact, overloading it is a liability because what happens with such a large population that's exponentially growing, it's going to deplete the nutrients a lot faster on an exponential basis, a lot faster. So if I'm using 100 grams each of flour and water and I'm using 10 grams of the starter, it's gonna mature and hold a lot better than if I put in 50 grams of the starter.
Right. Yep. You know, it's funny. I do it with my – I've got a 100% hydration, 50-50 white and whole wheat, and I dump out nearly almost all of it, probably 90% of it. And so I'm doing it naturally on the other one. And for this one, I just like, oh, my God, it's so precious. I want to keep it at 70-70-70. And, of course, that's the wrong thing to do. So I'll do it like I do my other one. That makes total sense. Yeah, that's excellent. I just needed to reassurance.
Okay.
I 2 weeks ago, I made the honey flaxseed crisp bread.
Hold on a sec. I've got
I've
got a couple of wild dogs here that,
okay.
that need attention.
Feed them some rye bread.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. He's out now.
Okay.
That
honey flaxseed rye, oh my gosh, so good, so good. The taste is out of this world. Really great.
Which one is that? I'm sorry.
That's the honey flaxseed rye crisp.
Oh right.
The crisp bread. Yeah, with the hole in the middle, and you put it in the broomstick, and but a question about that. You know, I don't know. I'm an obsessive baker. I'm into the minutia stuff, I guess. But I don't know if we all are. If that's just me, but. So, in the recipe, it said to coat each of the 12 balls with like 2 to 3 tablespoons of the rye flour sesame seed combo. there was no way that was happening, right? Like, I was lucky if that ball picked up a teaspoon of that stuff. If it adhered, probably not a big deal. I sprinkled it actually on the table, and when I rolled it out, some of that flaxseed, the sesame still like kind of stuck into the thing, and I'd flip it over, and so eventually I got more than a teaspoon of that stuff in. But naturally, it's just a ball of dough, and it's not going to suck up two or three tablespoons of that stuff unless I was doing something wrong.
Right.
So I just wanted to, like, no biggie, really, right? I mean, the idea is that you want enough flour there to be able to roll it out without sticking.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So I'm not going to worry too much about that. But I did have a question about,
yes,
do we roll out all 12 at once and then sort of, like, let it rise a little bit while I
feed
them?
No. Generally what I do is I have two ovens with baking stones in each. Two baking stones in each. And so what I do is I roll out just enough for the stones that I have. So in this case,
it would
be eight at a time because I can get two on each stone. And then while those are baking, I roll out the others.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess my central question was, is it okay to roll it and put it in the oven right away, or was there some kind of time built in to sort of like, yeah, you should roll it and let it like hang for 10 or 15 minutes so it does something, but apparently that's
No, I roll them and bake them immediately.
Okay, perfect. Yep, that's great. That's great. On page 222, you've got the black bread of Valdosta.
Valdosta, right.
And that guy never doubled in volume. It didn't budge in the pan. I just could not get it. Just did not behave. And maybe it was because I can't remember how much sour was in there, but maybe it was because I had the too much of the sour or something. But you know, mostly these things were right on, and I'll be danged if that one just I let it go for 90 minutes or more, and the damn thing didn't budge.
Interesting. How did the crumb come out? Was it firm or?
Honestly, I can't remember. I try to take notes. I've got marginalia all over the place in all my bread books because I try to keep detailed notes. And it never doubled in volume on the fermentation and the proof. It never budged in the pan. And I know I ate it. I think it was good. I think the taste is there. But there's not a lot I won't eat that I make, you know. So
there you go.
So I the taste was there, but I just thought, you know what, this is not behaving in the way that was expected or sort of written up in the book. And again, I didn't know if that was me or what. And I'm pretty good about following that stuff. But in this case, I'm sure, you know, the sponge, well, you know what, it might have been on this bread because you say specifically the sponge is 70-70-10.
Yeah.
And so,
well, you know what I would suggest is bake it again. Well,
I'm gonna do it again
and
yes,
see
exactly.
You know, see what happens. If it's still a problem, you know where to reach me. So
okay, cool. So for example, 222, it says the rice sour culture, 10 grams. So that's 10 grams of the culture. That's 70-70-10.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Okay, because I probably pulled 10 grams of the 70-70-70. And maybe it just burned out, like you said. It was too active and burned out early on and didn't raise or something. So
that's possible.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It could also, you know, it could also be. I mean, there are so many factors. It could also have been ambient temperature. So you know, who knows?
It's pretty toasty in my kitchen. I don't think it was on the cold side.
Yeah, and the best that anybody can do in any recipe is that it's an approximation.
For sure.
So,
yeah, I'm inspired to make it again. That'll be a good one.
Good.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just having so much fun with this. And you know, I have to say, you are to be credited with really pulling rye into the mainstream. You've either on the cutting edge or riding the wave nicely of really bringing this to the attention, I think, of – you know, certainly in the circles of the BBGA, and I'm a member of that, and you know, as a serious home baker, just, you know, somebody did something in the New York Times about, you know, rye bread, and there's a little bit of a resurgence, I feel, in America about the interest in rye, and again, you having, either your timing is great, or you set the fire, or you're fanning the flames, or a combination of all of it, but your timing is right, and it's really fun to see people discovering sort of this forgotten grain, you know, that Yeah, you must feel real good about the your.
Well, I do. You know, I mean, timing is everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but yeah, I mean, I feel great about it because you know, I have become just a total convert to rye baking over the course of the 2 or 3 or 4 years that I really delved deeply into it. One of the things I discovered, and it sounds to me like you folks are discovering it also, is just the incredible range of flavors and textures that it's possible to get out of this grain. That is just beyond the ken of most wheat bakers.
Right.
You know, I mean, wheat baking is largely about shaping technique and using external flavoring agents. You know, I'm on Facebook and I see a lot of these folks posting their multicolored croissants and the netted boules and batard and the flower stencils and so forth. But it really doesn't do much. Yeah, I mean, I've got several books, French bread books. And what I find most interesting about them, again, is that it's largely about shaping technique. The dough is almost always, you know, pretty much identical from bread to bread.
Yeah.
So it's all really interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to
add
a plug too for the Danish rye. I made that really good.
Yeah, that Danish rye is a nice accessible cuisine recipe to get to. I think Don is rolling again.
Yeah, sounds like it. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you for that one. I'm Danish heritage, and so I kind of gravitated towards that one.
Ah, good. Okay. Yeah, that one's that again. It's it's nice because it's yeast leavened, so it's easy. It's a straight dough. It's got that nice texture. It's got the seeds in it. It's sweet. It's a very accessible bread, and it's a great place if you know, especially if you're relatively new to rye baking. It's a great place to start.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm going to sign off, Stan. Thank you very much. I'll probably call in again next month, third Wednesday of the month, right?
Yeah, it's going to be. Well, I think next month I'm trying to decide because I'm going to be doing the course. The BBGA workshop on the 14th and 15th, and that's the third Wednesday of the month. So I may postpone it to the 22nd, but I will post it in Facebook with the correct call code.
Okay, and I'll keep an eye on your blog too.
Okay.
I'm signing off, so thank you very much for the call, Stan. I really do appreciate that. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's very nice
Thanks,
to be able
David.
To this March. Nice to hear you too, David. We'll talk to you later.
Okay man.
Bye.
Thanks. All right, Stan. Thanks so much. I'm going to try the black bread again. And thanks for the tips and the inspiration. It's really been a joy. And I hope you do come to the Midwest in the fall. I would definitely sign up for your class. I've earmarked the 8 breads that you noted in the flyer that you would make.
Right.
And I'd say, well, let me try to make all these on my own, you know. And we'll sort of see. But it'd be great to, you know, to see it in action. So
sure. Fantastic.
Thanks again for
My
everything
pleasure.
You're doing. And we'll talk to you next time.
Okay. You take care. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.